All right.
Okay, so let's let's go back to the spectral construction and its deformations, which is what I originally set up to do. So remember the setting was we had S, which was a variety, complex, and we had a coefficient vector bundle on S, which was fixed. And we were looking at the total space of that coefficient bundle with its natural map to S and achieves on that thing. So typically, for physical applications, we would like to take the canonical class, the determinant of K. So for applications, we would like to take that the top wedge power of K is the canonical class of the base, because this way the total space will have a trivial canonical class, and under mild assumptions will be a collabial. But for the deformation theory that I'll be talking about, this is not necessary. I mean, there is one special case in which it will come naturally, but it's an extra restriction. Okay, so we have this guy, and we want to look at coherent sheaves on it, or you know, the derived category of coherent sheaves on it, if you prefer, or quasi-coherent sheaves, and we want to understand it better. In particular, understand deformations of objects in it that, in a way that abandons the geometric structure of X, in the way that deforms the geometric structure of X as well. And I'm going to use the spectral construction in order to do that. So the point was that we had this correspondence, the spectral correspondence, which was rewriting the category of sheaves on X in terms of data on S. So it said that in its most useful form, probably, is that coherent sheaves on X, which are finite over S, is the same thing as coherent k-valued Higgs sheaves on S. And I just want to point out something which I forgot to mention the first lecture, that this condition, so if S is compact, if S is projective, for example, this condition that the coherent sheaves are finite over S is actually equivalent to requiring that the support of the coherent sheaf is compact. So if you're only interested in brains whose support is compact, this is all you get. So it's not an unnatural condition. Okay. So I'm saying this is the same as coherent sheaves on X. So if S is compact, say projective, this thing is the same as coherent sheaves on X with compact support. So when you're dealing with non-compact algebraic varieties, you have two natural categories that you can consider. You can consider the derived category of coherent sheaves, period, or the derived category of coherent sheaves with compact supports. And they're both natural. They have different homological properties. So for lately, people have, especially in A-model compactifications, have been looking at non-compact supports for brains. But those come up in a very strange way. So, if, for example, in this topological vertex story, people use non-compact special Lagrangians to slice the graph. But Yeah, I haven't seen people use, you know, non-compactly supported objects in the derived category on a non-compact labial, but maybe it's important. To the non-compact, I see. So maybe they're also useful. Then you have to look at the bigger category where you put here coherent, and then you'll get quasi-coherent Higgs shifts on this side, but with certain properties. But let's not go into that. Okay, so there was this spectral correspondence, and now in view of our causal duality machinery, we can say what it really is. It is an instance of causal duality. The point is that the left-hand side, the coherent shifts on X, finite over S, are finitely generated modules over sim of K duo. Right, because this is the push forward of the structure sheaf of all of X. So this is the sheaf of algebra on S, and any module on X, which is finite over S, is the same as a sheaf of OS modules on X, which are finitely generated as modules over this sheaf of algebras. The right-hand side, were these Higgs sheafs. But notice that if I have a Higgs sheaf E phi, I can produce out of it its natural a natural differential graded object. Namely, I can take E, wedge by phi, to go to E tensor omega 1, then wedge by phi again, which is going to take me to E tensor omega 2, and continue. And my integrability condition on the Higgs sheaf exactly tells me that this is a complex. This is a very nice complex. It's a complex which is for which the differential, the wedging with phi, is actually linear with respect to multiplication by functions. Okay, so it's like right. So if I have a Higgs sheaf, I have this differential graded complex, which, if you stare at it for a second, you can immediately recognize as a differential graded module over a differential graded algebra. I'm just going to write it with three entries here, because in a moment we'll be deforming it as a curved differential graded algebra. So it's just the differential graded algebra build out. I'm sorry, why do I have omega? This is k, this is wedge 2 of k, and so on. The Higgs field works with values in k. Right. So this differential graded algebra is just the stupid one. It starts with OS, goes to k, goes to wedge 2k, and so on, but the differentials are all zero. And there is no curvature. So you have a graded algebra, which you are viewing as a differential graded algebra with curvature, and we're looking at a differential graded module over it. So the Higgs fields are like free, finitely generated differential graded modules over this algebra. Okay, and now you see that the spectral correspondence is really causal duality, because this is a filtered algebra, with stupidly filtered because it's actually graded. So the filtration is split, it's augmented, it's anything you want. And its causal dual is a differential graded algebra with a trivial differential and a trivial curvature. So the spectral correspondence for these particular types of modules we are considering, on this side they look like free modules, here they look like just general modules. This of finite type, this is exactly the filtered causal duality. Filtered here doesn't have much meaning because this is a very degenerate case. So it's the filtered causal duality for modules over the Kozodio algebras seem of K duo. These are sheets of algebras over the base, and wedge K 0, 0. One remark that I need to make here is that remember that in order to run the causal duality, we needed a splitting of the first step of the filtration. But this filtration is globally split. You know, it's split on all steps, so this is not a choice. That's why we have a canonical dual. That's the first kind of causal duality I discussed, right? So now when I start deforming these objects, what I want to do is I want to deform both sides, or either side. So I want to deform this algebra to non-graded, filtered, non-commutative algebra, presumably. And consider what kind of sheaves I get. So the deformations of these sheaves will be exactly the deformations of the brains. So this is like deforming the Calabi-Yau in a non-commutative direction, deforming this algebra, right? And the modules will be exactly the non-commutative V-brains. But in order to understand how they behave and what they look like, I'm going to use the duality. And I'm going to check how the deformation of this algebra is reflected on this side and how the modules look like here. And they're going to look very commutative here, so we can really understand them. Okay, so let's see. Let's just start looking at examples of deformations. So yes, the first one will be the most trivial one, which would be deform this algebra, which, as I said, is the same as deforming the space X. Deform it just as a space, just as an algebraic variety. So deform sim dot of k duo as an algebraic variety. Sim dot of k duo, which is the same as x. Right? Remember, x was the relative spec of this sim dot of k duo over S. So deform this guy just as an algebraic variety. And of course, you know, there are two types of deformations it has. It has deformations that come from deforming the base. It has deformations that, well, three types. It has deformations that come from deforming the base, but those are boring, so I'm not going to So I'm not going to look at those. There are also deformations that come from deforming the coefficient vector bundle to a different vector bundle. These are also boring because we are just going to get Higgs sheaves again. So the only extra direction of interesting commutative deformations of this space is when you deform this vector bundle to an affine bundle. Because this certainly destroys subvarieties in X. For example, X is a vector bundle. It has a zero section. So if you are looking at sheaves that are supported at the zero section, and you try to deform them in the direction in which X deforms as an affine bundle, they're going to disappear. Okay, so algebraic variety, namely as an affine bundle with a group of translations K. And the affine bundles with a group of translations K, we know what they're parameterized by. So these are parameterized. Oh, by the way, I should have said anything I'm talking about today is a joint work with Lyudmil and Dimur Wolf. Okay, so these are parameterized by H1 on S with coefficients in this vector bundle. So given a class omega in H1 of S with coefficients in K, this is an infinitesimal deformation of K as an affine bundle, but in fact it's an actual deformation. It's integrable. So we get an affine bundle K sub omega over over S, and actually let me write it X sub omega because I really want to look at this as a space. X sub omega over S, the projection map I'll call P sub omega. So it's a principal homogeneous space over K classified by omega, and I can take the sheaf of fiberwise functions. So phi omega lower star of O X omega is some sheaf of algebras downstairs, which I'm going to call sim sub omega of K. It's a sheaf of filtered commutative algebras. They are not graded anymore. They're only filtered because the bundle is affine. They're all commutative. So these are filtered commutative. And it's associated graded for this filtration is exactly sim dot of K. So it's a deformation of the graded algebra sim dot of K to a filtered algebra with the same associated graded. And I'm gonna spell it out completely. I'm going to write exactly what this guy is and what this guy is. And, yeah, just in a second. But right. Because there is no origin. You have translations. I'm going to write this thing explicitly in a second. Let me just, so what we are after now, so now, you know, deformations, so now B-brains on K omega, which are going to be these coherent sheaves on X omega, sorry, with compact support, say. This should correspond to some data. So these are still, you know, the typical B-brains that people look at. By the way, if we started with K, X, which is a collabial, this is also going to be a collabial. So this is a known as collabial deformation. And these guys are going to be through causal duality into one-to-one correspondence with some CDG modules of CDG deformation of this boring CDG algebra, and the deformation is given by K, by omega. So what I would like to do is understand what this deformation is, understand what the shape of these modules is, and describe them in some explicit terms on S. Okay, so let me spell this out. So now, explicitly, what is X omega? Well, I have a cohomology class omega in H1 SK, so it gives me an extension of OS by K, which I'll call F omega. So it's just a vector bundle of rank, the rank of K plus 1, which is an extension like that. Now, in here, I have K is whatever rank it is, but this has rank 1 more. Right. So in here, there is a canonical section. One, the nowhere vanishing section, the nowhere constant function one. So I can pull back this extension, or I can look at the fiber of this map over one, and that's X omega. So X omega is the fiber of the map from F omega over S over 1. One is a section. It's a map from S to the... Yeah. But now let's look at total spaces. These are all vector space. No. These are all vector bundles. So one is a section in the sheaf of S. So in particular, it gives me a map from the base to the total space of my vector bundle OS. What I'm looking at, and I have a map from the total space of F omega to the total space of OS, I'm just restricting that map over that section. That's X omega. But now you manifestly see that K acts on it because this is like a coset for this map, right? Non-trivial coset, so K acts on every coset. Yeah, so maybe I should have put here total space. So not fiber, but restriction of this to S, which is mapped here by the section 1. So just a fiber product picture. Okay, now how do you see geometrically the filtration? The point is that it comes as a filtration by an order of pole. Geometrically, you can look at the projectivization of the vector bundle Fw. So it's a projective space bundle now over S. And now XW sits in here as an open set. And it's the complement of the projectivization of the vector bundle K. K is a subbundle in FW, in F omega. And if I projectivize, this gives me a projective subbundle, which is a divisor. If I subtract them, that's exactly X omega. Now, remember, my algebra S omega dot K was K dual, right? I was doing total space of K, so my algebra in this, I should have had a dual everywhere here. I have a dual for the, My algebra was just the push forward P omega of OXK omega. But this is the same. What is this? These are holomorphic functions on X omega. But from the viewpoint of these projective space bundles, they are meromorphic functions of P F omega, which have poles along this divisor at most. So this is the same. I'll call this map P omega again. This is the same as the push forward of the function, of the sheaf of functions that have poles at most at pk. Which is usually denoted like that. Okay? And now this sheaf is naturally filtered by the order of pole. And that's the filtration that we want to have on these functions. So filter by order of pole along pk. And you can make it even more explicit in terms of the vector bundle extension that we had. This algebra, so algebraically, sim omega k dual is just the symmetric algebra of f omega modulo one non-homogeneous relation, exactly of the type that we were taking last time. It's one in the symmetric algebra, minus one. So the filtration, the ith step of the filtration is exactly the ith symmetric power of F omega dual. And in fact, the maps are just, if I call this map alpha omega, they're just multiplication, symmetric multiplication by the dual of that map. So you have OS goes to F omega goes to sim 2 F omega. I'm writing the filtration here. So maybe I should say this is in here. This is in here. This is in sim 3 F omega. And so on. And this is just multiplication by alpha omega dual, multiplication by alpha omega dual, multiplication by alpha omega dual. These are all duals. So this deformed sheaf, alpha is the map from F omega to OS, and so the dual map alpha omega is just an element in F omega dual. I'm just multiplying in the symmetric algebra by that element, and that gives me the filtration. And now you manifestly see that the associated graded piece here is K dual. Here it's sim 2 of K dual. Here it's sim 3 of K dual, and so on. Okay. Now, what is the Kozul dual of this guy? So, sim dot omega k dual by Kozul duality should be transformed into some version of this curve differential graded algebra deformed by omega somehow. I'm going to denote it by this with subscript omega. Now, the problem with this, if you stare at that for a moment, is that in order to construct the Kozul dual, we needed the splitting of the first step of the filtration of our algebra. What is the first step of the filtration of our algebra? It's K dual goes to F omega dual, and the quotient is O. Right? So I need a splitting of this sequence.
What
did I do? I did it the wrong way. OS, K dual, yeah. So I need a splitting in order to run the Kozul duality machinery. Or equivalent to splitting, yeah. Here, yeah, same thing. Okay, well, but I chose my deformation to be non-trivial, so there is no splitting. Right? Omega being non-zero exactly says that this extension is non-zero. So there is no hope that I can globally get a sheaf of curve differential graded algebras. But remember that our notion of an isomorphism of a curved differential gradient algebra included those gauge transformations. So I'm allowed, if I'm doing sheaves of curved differential gradient algebras, I'm allowed to take, you know, sheaves of differential gradient algebras on patches and glue them not just by isomorphisms of the underlying coalgebras, but also by gauge transformations. And that's what's going to save the day. So to construct this guy, we need a sheaf of curved DGAs, which is glued out of curved DGAs on local patches by gauge transformations. So this is exactly the same thing that people do in derived algebraic geometry, right? If you want to do a derived algebraic variety, which is the algebraic variety equipped with a sheaf of differential graded algebras as a structure sheaf, you have two options. You can just take a global sheaf of algebras equipped with a differential and declare two such varieties to be isomorphic if you have a map of the underlying spaces which induces quasi-isomorphisms between the sheaf of differential graded algebras. Or you could define the structure a priori to be locally defined sheaves of differential graded algebras that are glued by quasi-isomorphisms, which is obviously the thing you want to do because otherwise you won't have fiber products. So you have to do exactly the same thing here. The only problem is that we are not quite allowing quasi-isomorphisms because the Kozul duality is behaving very badly with respect to quasi-isomorphisms. We are only allowing homotopies. The gauge transformations I introduced were just homotopies of curved differential graded algebras. But that's all. Okay, so it's very easy to imagine what we're doing here. We have to split this thing. We can split it locally, so we have to choose a bunch of local splittings, and then we have to say how we glue the resulting Kozul dual guys. Yeah. And they're also isomorphic. Yeah, they're going to be identity on the level of the algebra. They're just going to be identity on the level of the algebra. Yeah. Okay, so. All right, so choose a check covering of S, trivializing my omega. So and the cocycle representative omega ij, which cocycle representing of. This just means that I have chosen open sets and I have chosen splittings of this sequence on each open set. And omega ij is just the difference of two splittings. All right, so now what you do is, now each of those gives me a splitting of the first step of the filtration here, which will give me a Kozul dual, and the Kozul dual is just going to be lambda k 0, 0 on each open patch. So on each UI, this gives a section of X omega restricted to UI over UI, and so leads to a Kozul dual of the sheaf sim omega K dual, because notice that my sequence of nested spaces was generated by this one. So once I split this guy, I split everything as an algebra. So this is now really on the open patch. It's a symmetric algebra, and we know what the dual of the symmetric algebra is. It's just this guy. So Kozul dual of this is lambda k 0, 0 restricted to UI. And now lambda k 0, 0, omega is going to be the disjoint union of lambda k 0, 0 restricted to ui, where module and equivalence relation, when the equivalence relation is gluing on each overlap by the gauge transformation given by omega ij. So where lambda k 0, 0 ui is glued to lambda k 0, 0 uj by, I hope you can see this, identity comma omega ij by the formula I wrote last time. Right? Last time I gave you a formula for a map between two differential graded algebras that consisted of a map between the underlying algebras and an element in the one graded one piece of the second one. So that's the map of the underlying algebra, that's the element. So there was this morphisms in the category of curved differential graded algebras that I defined last time, which were if you have B underlined, which is B, DB, HB, and C underlined, which is C, DC, HC, a map between those, F underlined, was a pair. F and forgot what I call it, I think I called it alpha, such that F is just a map of algebras alpha is an element in C1 and there was a compatibility condition which was essentially the condition saying that alpha acts as a gauge transformation on the differentials and the curvature. Let's see if I can find. Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Yeah, so it was saying that f of db x is dc of fx plus commutator of alpha with fx, and f of hb is hc plus dc of alpha plus alpha squared. There you can trivialize, there you can do the duality, but then you have to descend.
K acts.
Right, and you have to descend. Yeah. Right. So I'm going to say something about that in a second. Yeah. Yeah, you can say it this way without choosing local patches. Yeah. So K acts and you descend, and this is what you get. This guy. Okay. Yeah. So now what are the modules? What corresponds to these B brains on X omega? Yes. D zero, okay. This is zero, and omega is a one form, so omega over H omega is zero. Omega is just a section of K. No, K is of higher rank here.
Because the algebra is tiny.
What if K were the
No, this algebra is commutative. Yeah. This is like a vector space. K is like a vector space, Cn, and omega is like a vector in here. I'm just taking omega wedge with itself. It's just in wedge K. It's Q-symmetric, so any vector times with itself is zero. Yeah. This is not, it's not a matrix value thing. It's just the vector. Yeah. Actually, I do have this remark in the note. Okay. All right. But let me now tell you what the deformed Higgs guys are, right? So on the variety side, where we were just looking at the brains, they were just brains on this X omega. So now we get that the deformed spectral correspondence says that coherent sheaves on X omega with compact support correspond to modules over this guy, which I'm going to call omega twisted Higgs sheaves. And again, you can write them down explicitly. They're going to be pairs, E, which is a global vector bundle, and a collection of phi i's, where the phi I is just a Higgs field on the restriction of this vector bundle on each open. These guys satisfy the integrability condition as they're supposed to, but they don't quite glue into a global Higgs field because there is the omega defect. So phi j minus phi I is going to be omega ij times the identity. Okay. And maybe one remark worth making again. Is that there aren't that many of these guys if I'm insisting on compact supports. So note that if the rank of E is finite, which means I have a compact support on the left-hand side, then I can take traces. So we get that the trace of phi I minus the trace of phi j equals R times omega ij times the identity. I'm sorry. R times omega ij. Which means that my cocycle is a co-boundary. Okay? So if the rank of E is less than infinity and E is torsion free, supported on the whole space and has no torsion subsheaves, then this cocycle will be automatically a co-boundary, so this thing just doesn't exist.
I think you started with saying E was a vector.
Oh, sheaf. Yes. Coherent sheaf. Right. So globally, this thing don't exist, but there are sheaves like that are supported on subvarieties. But they're exactly the subvarieties on which omega becomes trivial. So
a spectral sheath for a brain, E on X omega, will exist. What do I think? So, given a spectral sheaf E on X omega, which is coherent, we get that pi omega lower star of E must be supported on a subvariety downstairs on which omega vanishes. So this is such that the support, that omega restricted on its support, is the zero cohomology class. So you only see that spectral covers deform, but only if they're covers of subvarieties on which survive in the deformation, which is not surprising. This is only if you insist on finite rank, of course. If you want quasi-coherent, you have plenty. Okay. And my one remark that I wanted to make, just to connect this to the B field, is it's not very illuminating, but
why the torsion free assumption?
No, there is nothing torsion free. I'm saying if this thing is torsion free,
right? Then you
Well, because otherwise the trace is not very well defined. Otherwise, you have to restrict to the support. You know, it works for any sheaf of pure dimension. If you have a sheaf of pure dimension, sheaf that's torsion-free when you restrict it to its support, then you can do the same thing on the support. Yeah? I was taking S to be compact. If you want to get an interesting example, let's take S to be. Well, if you take S to be a curve, you don't get many interesting examples. So if you take S to be an elliptic curve, and say take K to be the trivial line bundle, right, then the X is just, you know, S cross C with the projection to S. The spectral covers here are disconnected. They are going to be just copies of the elliptic curve sitting inside S cross C at just different points in C. These are the usual spectral covers. Now, you have one non-commutative deformation, right, because you have the T extension here. So you have H1 of SOS is C again, and it corresponds to the indecomposable tier bundle of rank 2, which is the indecomposable extension of OS by S. So I can take omega to be this. And now you can ask, what are the deformations of the spectral covers in this case? And the answer is there are none, because this class is not trivial on the base. It's only trivial on points in the base. Yeah, I get an X omega, which is just the. So I can say what X omega is. X omega is the twisted. I mean, this thing is actually the cotangent bundle of our elliptic curve. Right, and X omega is the twisted cotangent bundle of our elliptic curve. Twisted by omega. Omega, by the way, notice in this case is just the Keller class on the elliptic curve. Okay, so this is the twisted cotangent bundle, and what we're really doing in this deformation, this thing is a hyper-Keller manifold, and this is the twister deformation. Right, so we are sitting over C right now, so this is a patch in the twister deformation that avoids infinity, and I have X, so at zero I have some script X. At zero I have X zero, and at every other point I have X omega, because these, as varieties, these are the same for any non-zero omega. And this is just a patch in the twister deformation of X0 as a hyperKalian manifold. Twister, yeah. So this is the twisters. Okay? So what we're saying is that if I start with a brain here, which is supported on a compact subvariety, and there are some compact subvarieties, like unions of elliptic curves sitting in X, and I try to deform it in the twister deformation, I'm out of luck. It doesn't deform. It's obstructed. Unless it's a point, yeah. If I take a point, I can deform it. But if I take a curve in here, it's obstructed. It doesn't deform. It's a quas. For example, one way to say it is, it's an algebraic quas. So, okay, you can say. Yeah. But that's very typical in algebraic geometry, right? You can have a family, even for compact varieties, you can have a family of varieties, so that in one fiber you have a curve, and in nearby fibers you don't have that curve. It's not algebraic anymore. Okay, so in compact varieties, this happens because of Hodge theoretic reasons. You have a curve whose quas is a Hodge quas, but you move a little bit the complex structure, and the quas ceases to be a Hodge quas. This is not the case here, because. I don't know why it's alarming. This is an ordinary algebraic deformation, right? I just rewrote it in some other language, which tells me immediately that, I mean, in this simple example, I could have said that these guys disappear without even looking at the Kozul dual. I could just have worked out the Kudaira-Spencer theory here and see that there is an infinitesimal obstruction. But in general, it's more complicated. That's why this approach is. Yeah, it's just gonna be these guys. It's just gonna be global vector bundles on the base elliptic curve, together with locally defined fields that satisfy this equation. All right, but as I say, we cannot solve this unless. So there are two ways in which we can solve this. All right, I can only solve it if E is infinite rank, or if E is supported at points. In this case, these are the only solutions I'll get. Yeah, so you get more interesting examples if you look at higher dimensional varieties as bases, because then you have, you know, plenty of subvarieties on which these cohomology classes can vanish. But I just want to say that the reason this curve disappears here is not because that their class becomes non-Hodge. Yeah, you can compactify the whole picture. Remember, our picture came with a compactification by these projective bundles. So you can compactify the whole picture, and there, of course, the quas of these curves stay perfectly Hodge as quases in the whole family. So in the compactification, this curve that is a nice curve here does go through. But what happens with it becomes non-compact, because here it does not intersect the infinity section, and if I move it a little bit, it will start intersecting. That's what's going to happen. Did I say this right?
So what's the picture? You're saying if I take an elliptic curve,
yeah, it's just going to push it at infinity. It's not going to intersect it. It's just going to be contained. That's what I was worried about. Yeah. If I move it, so here it lives somehow inside. But if I move it here, it's going to get pushed at infinity, which I have removed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. All of it. Yeah. All of it. Well, in this case, there are no higher genus things, right? Because I took the trivial line bundle. The higher genus things are all disconnected. Right?
I can add fibers, but then it's not compact. Yeah, if you, you mean if you take a Huygens curve in the projectivized thing, yeah. Okay, so I just want to make this remark about gerbs. So there is a gerb here working on the background. And that's not surprising because if you look at this definition of these twisted Higgs bundles, they really look like twisted sheaves, right, which are sheaves on gerbs. And there is a gerb interpretation, but here it's slightly less conventional because in order to get the gerb interpretation, you have to actually interpret the Higgs bundles as sheaves. So I don't know if it's worth actually spending time on that because I'm not going to get anywhere anyway. Well, maybe very quickly. So just ordinary Higgs bundles. E with phi goes to E tensor K can be interpreted as sheaves on something. Well, we can use Kujul duality to interpret them as spectral data, but there is a direct interpretation of sheaves which does not use duality. Namely, they are sheaves on a stack. So you can look at K dual. This is a vector bundle on S. So far, I have been describing the Kujul duality describes the Higgs sheaves as, I mean, the Higgs sheaves as sheaves on something that has to do with the total space of K. You can also describe them as sheaves with something that has to do with the total space of K dual. And the way you do that is by converting K dual into a stack. So the point is that K dual is a bundle of groups. And I can take the quotient of S by that bundle of groups. Look at K dual and at the stack B of K dual over S. So as a stack, so this is like a bundle of classifying spaces for these abelian groups. So as a stack, you know, as the underlying space of that stack is just S. But it has a huge stabilizer at each point, which is K dual. And now, what is a sheaf on this stack? Sheaf on BK dual, well, we know how to describe sheafs on stacks because this is given to us by presentation, right? This BK dual guy is just the quotient of S by K dual with the trivial action of K dual. So sheaves on this are the same as, so sheaves on BK dual is a sheaf E on S together with an action of K dual. So together with a homomorphism from E tensor K dual to E, which we call phi. And the action condition is exactly phi wedge phi equals zero. So you get, if you just look at sheaves on BK dual, you get Higgs sheaves. Unfortunately, you don't get all Higgs sheaves. So this way we get all nilpotent Higgs sheaves. So in fact, sheaves on this stack are the same thing as Higgs sheaves, but with the extra condition that phi is a nilpotent endomorphism. And if you want to get all of them, you have to work not with stacks, but with formal stacks.
to get all Higgs sheaves, the Higgs sheaves on VK dual completed. So K dual is a vector bundle. It has a zero section. I can take the full formal neighborhood of the zero section. Taking the structure shift of that gives me now a family of formal groups. Now do the same thing. Take S modulo that formal group. Nilpotent just means phi in some power equals zero. Yeah, composing, remember, composing Higgs fields means the same as a map from E to E tensor K. But the composition, you know, phi wedge phi is zero, so the composition phi composed with phi is actually a map from E to E tensor sim 2 of K, and then sim 3 of K, and so on. You just want some finite composition to be zero. Yeah, so if you want to get all Higgs shifts, you have to take this formal stack. But it's not that much different from this one, right? Basically, there are more shifts here because not every shift is going to be algebraizable, but that's all. Okay, so this is just the usual interpretation of Higgs shifts, and now these twisted Higgs shifts are going to be shifts on a gerb on that formal stack. Omega twisted Higgs shifts are the same thing as shifts on an ogerb on the formal stack BK dual hat. And omega twisted nilpotent Higgs shifts are going to be on the gerb here. And the ogerb is very easy to imagine. It's just coming from the extension we had. We had K dual, this is F, K dual, F omega dual, O, and then you have BO, BF omega dual, BK dual. This is now a short exact sequence of commutative group stacks. And so this thing is an ogerb over BK dual. And you can just pull it back to the full formal neighborhood. If you make just a supermanifold, yeah, I guess so. I haven't thought of it, but yeah. So in order to justify this thing, you only have to compute H2 of this stack, of the formal stack, with coefficients in O. And when you compute it, you get H1 of the base with coefficients in K. So omega gives you a natural element there, and you compute that natural element, and that's it. I mean that. Well, the modules over the Dobo resolution, I guess, will give you everything, not just the twisted objects. These were some very special deformations I was looking at, right? Deformations of X as a variety. They're also the, you know, the non-commutative deformations. And if you just look at modules over the Dobo resolution. Oh no, that absolutely, yeah, absolutely, yeah. You can. Yeah, no, I just did the patches because they're concrete, but. There should be, but yeah, I've been looking actually for that for a while, but I don't know. So that I even asked Ezra yesterday, but he seems to think that it's not.
It's supposedly in a part of this causal duality over operats yoga, but for some reason it's not as general as I thought. Am I right?
Sorry.
Constantine was asking if there is a causal duality over a DGA, for algebras over a DGA. Oh, yeah, Benison Ginsburg's. Right. No, but no, I think the. Is it only over semi simple algebras? They definitely need the semi simplicity. Yeah, but then if you have a differential, yeah, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe not. Gosh. I'm done with example one. Yes. Yeah, I actually don't know how to interpret this as a B-field because this is an O-jerp, right? It's not an S1 jerp or an O-star jerp. So it looks like an infinitesimal version of a B-field. Yeah. It could be that that's exactly the explanation, that this class is some twisted sector that but I don't know how to interpret it. So this is the only Jerbic interpretation of the class I have. And I don't think it will have anything else. Yeah, I mean, the reason I want to tell you about all this, unfortunately I won't be able to, is because it seems to me that there are very natural mathematical constructions, but it seems to me that there is some physics behind them. So I have no idea what the physics is. So. Okay, so some other examples. Well, so those are the, those are the most obvious ones. So you take H0 of S with coefficients in wedge 2 of K. A little h in there. Okay, so now I'm trying to deform on the other side. We start with this curved DGA, which had a trivial differential and a trivial curvature. And let's try to deform it so that the differential stays trivial, but the curvature changes. Because this is in wedge K, in wedge 2K, I can't put it here with a trivial differential, right? Because this commutes with everything. Our algebra is super commutative. Okay, so I can look at the deformation of this to wedge K, 0, H. Now, this is going to give us non-commutative brains of the simplest possible kind, really. So what are those? The modules here, in terms of the basic variety S, are very easy to describe. They are Higgs fields, E phi, in which the integrability condition has been destroyed. Phi wedge phi is not zero now, but it's H times the identity. By the way, I just want to point out that this is the precise analog of the situation Anton had last time, but the wedge and the symmetric algebra they play the opposite roles. So Anton last time was looking at sim V 0 H. He was looking at this curved differential gradient algebra where this was a vector space, this was a quadratic form on that vector space. All right? And this was causal dual to the Clifford algebra. Maybe I should call this V dual. This was causal dual to the Clifford algebra. VH.
So this was his potential, and it was coming from looking at the Clifford algebra. So I'm looking at exactly the same situation, but now the role of the symmetric and the exterior algebra are reversed. The exterior algebra appears, in my case, in the curved differential graded side, and the symmetric algebra appears on the filtered side. Yeah, I think for the curved differential graded thing, he did take the quadratic approximation, didn't he? I don't remember, but I think you... H was the superpotential, yeah. It's not in S, yeah, in general quadratic, but I thought that he took the modification for the... Yeah, the semi-simple key. Yeah, I don't remember, but I just want to point out this formula. So this case is somehow analogous to this one. Anyway. Okay, so these objects are very easy to describe, right? We understand them completely. So these are Higgs fields with central curvature, right? Now, what do they correspond to here? Well, they correspond to some kind of non-commutative spectral covers. And again, it's very easy to say what those are. So this class in wedge 2 of K, so H gives Heisenberg algebra. Which is a nilpotent extension of K dual. And as a sheaf of vector spaces, it's just the direct sum of K dual and O tensor central times the central element. And then just the commutator is given by the usual commutation relations. So CC0 for seeing K dual, CA is 0, I'm sorry, CC is 0, CA is 0 for A and K dual, and whatever, AB is H contracted with A wedge B. So it's a sheaf of Heisenberg-Lie algebras. Well, not quite Heisenberg, but nilpotent-Lie algebras, two-step nilpotent-Lie algebras. And the Lie bracket is always linear, because my class was linear. And so the Kozul dual to this curved differential graded algebra is going to be some non-commutative filtered algebra, which is very easy to identify. It's this, call it U sub H D. No, I'm sorry, U sub H. So this is just the universal enveloping algebra of LH, modded again by the non-homogeneous relation, 1 of the universal enveloping algebra minus C. It's a filtered non-commutative algebra. Again, it has associated graded algebra, our symmetric algebra, and we're just looking at modules over that. So now we get this non-commutative spectral covers, non-commutative brains, which are modules over that algebra, which are kind of hard to study. On the other hand, on this side, they're very easy to study. The algebra. The space, yeah. So you should think about this thing. Right. I should have now x sub h, and in quotes because I don't know how to define it. And this is the algebra functions along the fibers of that over S.
On
the fibers. It's an algebra on S, right? So if I have x sub h, it comes with this projection p sub h to S, and this guy is just the push forward of the structure sheet. Into something non-commutative, exactly. Yeah, it's a flat Poisson bracket on the base. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's yeah, exactly. I don't think so. Because it's Poisson. It's right, this is Poisson. It's not form. Because the fibers, K is like the tangent bundle to the fiber. It's not the cotangent bundle to the fiber. It's not invertible, no. I'm not assuming it's invertible. And of course, you can... It's constant on the fiber, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there is this. No, no, this is.
one
over the Poisson structure.
It's usually a red trade off.
Yeah. We know.
But that's confusing. It's true, right? I mean, in the Hochschild homology, you have these two pieces, one that looks like the B fields, the other that looks like the Poisson structures. And in some cases, you can identify the formations in one direction with the formations in the other directions. But in all cases where you can do it, they look like accidents to me. I actually have no explanation why this happens.
In physics, there's a metric with which you can raise and lower indices. So you can construct the upper IJ out of the lower.
Okay, and so I don't think. Yeah. Well, I am apparently finished. This is nothing. I mean, this is very soft, right? The only remark is that you can describe the modules in a very easy way, because we have a good handle on those guys. And you can, of course, look at the version for when this algebra is not nilpotent, right? K does not need to be a commutative Lie algebra. So this would just mean introduce a differential, right? So also I can look at KdH. Now this just means taking the dual, which is going to be a differential. Our differential gonna be a Lie bracket on K, dual. Notice that it's very easy to construct these guys, right? You just choose any Lie bracket and any H. And now, so this is a Lie bracket. And again, you get a central extension. I mean, not central, but you get an extension. Actually, it's a central extension. You get an extension of K dual by O. But now this is a non-commutative Lie algebra. And again, this thing is Kozul dual to the same kind of thing. You take this algebra, you take its universal enveloping, and you model by the non-homogeneous relation. So, of course, if you didn't have dH, this would be just whichever.
This will be just the Chevalier-Eilenberg complex of our Lie algebra, right? And now we are just deforming it slightly by an h. And again, you have a Higgs interpretation. Now it's more complicated because now it's not generated by degree zero, so you have to write the full complex for a module here. But it's just a module over that. And again, these are easy to describe. Well, I'm assuming here it's all linear, right? Yeah. So in general, it doesn't have to be, and that's where you get the really interesting examples, right? So the special case. Which is the most interesting one, is when you take K to be the one forms on the base, the holomorphic one forms. And so we're taking the wedge algebra of omega 1, say with the Deram differential, and 0. So that's causal dual to the algebra of differential operators on S. So deforming the Higgs differential graded algebra, the one that had the 0 here, to the ordinary Deram complex just gives us a deformation of Higgs bundles to D modules. And of course, on this level, it's the causal duality is a total tautology. It just tells you that Higgs bundles are, I'm sorry, that D modules are the same as their Deram complexes. Right? I mean, there is nothing deep there. But it also tells you how you can deform a little bit further, because now you can put an H here, and you can also put an omega. And so you get twists of the D modules by an H and an omega. And if you analyze what the data of putting in H and omega means, you see that this is exactly what parameterizes sheaves of twisted differential operators. These are sheaves of twisted differential operators. So this is just a particular case of a correspondence that people have understood a long time ago. Okay, the interesting thing which I didn't get to, the new thing really, I mean this is all very soft, just an interpretation of one thing into another. The new thing is that that I wanted to tell you about was a case of an application of these non-commutative deformations to the particular case when you take your space X to be the total space of the cotangent bundle of a curve. In that case, so again, you can compactify this to the projectivization of Kc plus O. And Kc plus O is a Poisson surface, which has a Poisson structure that restricts to the symplectic structure here. And it actually vanishes twice at infinity. Now, there is a natural non-commutative deformation that corresponds of the algebra of relative functions on X that corresponds to the Poisson structure we are talking about. And so this gives you a non-commutative deformation of this space, and it's interesting to understand what the spectral covers or the sheaves on that non-commutative space are. And the point is that something very interesting happens here, which was observed before in other instances. You can look at sheaves on this X, but you have to control their behavior at infinity, I mean, even before you deform. So you can look at sheaves on X that have a controlled behavior at infinity and try to deform them. I'm sorry, yeah. So let me say it differently. Uh, Let me give you the basic example. So if you look at instantons on R4, or instantons on the four sphere, we can interpret them by the Donaldson correspondence as sheaves on P2 that are framed along a line. Now, a line in P2 I can think of as the degeneracy locus of a Poisson structure. It's exactly the Poisson structure that gives us the Moyal quantization. Right? The triple line is going to be exactly the Poisson structure that gives us the Moyal quantization. So I can take the non-commutative deformation of P2 corresponding to that Poisson structure and ask what happens with the instantons when I deform in this direction. And so something really amazing happens, because if you take the moduli space of instantons as a space, it's hyperkähler, and it has one non-obvious deformation, which is the twister deformation. It's a natural, you know, very natural deformation as a space, carrying all the geometry with it. Now, if you look at the nearby fibers in the twister deformation, the points there have no obvious interpretation as moduli spaces on P2. On the other hand, you expect, right, if you start with objects on P2, if the moduli space of objects deform, somehow these deformations of the moduli spaces should have a modular interpretation. So the great thing was that Nekrasov and Schwarz noticed that they indeed do have a modular interpretation, and they have a modular interpretation as moduli spaces of sheaves on these non-commutative P2s, corresponding to the Moyal direction. And then Anton and Kuznetsov and Orlov, they actually wrote a very nice paper generalizing the Ward correspondence to that situation. So you have this interesting situation in which you have an algebraic variety, a non-commutative algebraic deformation of that variety. I'm sorry, an algebraic variety, a moduli space of objects from that variety, and a deformation of the moduli space that does not come of deformation from a deformation of the underlying variety. And you can ask, does the deformation of the moduli space come from some non-obvious, non-geometric deformation? And there are cases in which it comes from a deformation of the underlying variety as a stack. So this is what I would call a Biffle deformation. And there are cases when it comes from deformation of the underlying variety as a non-commutative space. So this is exactly the thing one would like to explore here. So you have these natural non-commutative Poisson surfaces with Poisson structure degenerating at infinity. You can look at the moduli space of sheaves framed at infinity and try to investigate those. And it turns out that by applying Kozul duality to them, it's very easy to describe the moduli space, because I can do Kozul duality here. In terms of generalized Higgs objects, which I'm not going to write because I don't have time. But it turns out that the moduli space is again homomorphic symplectic, and probably is hyperkähler, but I don't know how to prove it. And it has one natural deformation, one extra deformation, which is probably the twister deformation, but again, I don't know how to prove it. And now the question is, can we interpret these nearby deformations as non-commutative deformations, as shifts on the non-commutative deformations of this guy? And the answer is yes. You just trace through the Higgs data, through the Kozul duality, and you interpret the nearby moduli spaces as moduli spaces of these non-commutative brains. And they're interesting looking guys, so I want to show them to you, but I think I'll stop here because 5 minutes is, I think, the most I should take. Okay. So, B fields. Yeah.
When's the last lecture?
When is the last lecture? No.
All right.
Next time.
Tony again.